Welcome to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up this hour, we'll talk with Dr. Adrian Hennis, who's joining a team at a site in western Oklahoma as a part of the PBS television program Time Team America. It airs tonight, and on the program, archaeologists have 72 hours to uncover buried secrets. And then later this hour, we'll talk with Eva Aldrich about the role of philanthropic nonprofits in building South Dakota's rural communities. But first, officials say that some of the people who fled an Ebola quarantine center in a slum in the capital of Liberia when it was attacked over the weekend are again under observation at a hospital. This is the latest news in the struggle to contain the spread of an Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Over 1,000 people have died from the disease in Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria. Some South Dakota-based church organizations do missionary work in this part of the world, including the Luke Society, which has partnerships with community health clinics in countries around the world, including Liberia. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Dr. Craig Kuiper, who is the Director of Ministry Development at the Luke Society. But first, Charles McElray has this report on what South Dakota hospitals know about the signs to look for in Ebola patients.
Dr. Lon Keitlinger is the state epidemiologist. He stresses that Ebola is not an airborne virus. The only way to get the disease is to come into contact with an infected person's body fluids. He says the media hype over Ebola is overblown in some cases.
Especially on our American side, it's very, very serious in Africa, but in the United States, it may be being hyped a little bit too much.
Keitlinger says at the same time, all hospitals in South Dakota have the necessary staff and training to receive an Ebola patient. He says there is a fine line between making the public and hospitals aware of the outbreak and sensationalizing the problem.
In this day of modern jet travel and global trade, we say a disease anywhere could be a disease in your own hometown or family.
Casual contact, even on a closed airplane, won't spread Ebola to everyone on board, but airplanes still connect the globe. Dr. Greg Kuiper is with the Luke Society. It's a Christian organization based in Sioux Falls that engages in medical ministry. The society operates community health clinics in countries around the world, including in the middle of the West African Ebola outbreak. Kuiper says this outbreak shows that anyone planning a church mission trip to a third world country needs to be aware of the risks.
Sometimes church groups go and really don't have the proper educational perspective that they need on preventing disease or getting involved in something that they had no real knowledge of. I think there has to be some pre-travel education of these people so that they understand how to prevent acquiring the disease.
Kuiper says the hype over Ebola can be more dangerous than the disease itself. He points out that malaria is killing many times more people every day than Ebola, but it doesn't get the same attention. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
And Dr. Greg Kuiper joins us on the line. Dr. Kuiper, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the Luke Society's partnership with this. I understand you have a medical clinic in Monrovia?
Yes, we do. We partner with Denise Maxwell, who is actually an RN, running a clinic in Liberia, a country that has been quite short on doctors ever since their civil war a decade ago.
And what impact has the Ebola outbreak had on this clinic?
Well, I think you've seen some of the news about the residents of one of the slum areas where they were trying to contain some of the Ebola patients. And residents in the community were upset to have these patients transferred into their community. It's kind of the classic NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard phenomenon. And so it was a misdirected effort where the people broke into this place and tried to shut it down. The patients left. Many of them were left, but the 17 patients, I understand, that did leave yesterday have been quarantined again, which is good. But that kind of hysteria is what is happening in the city where Denise practices, and healthcare workers have not been showing up to work because they're afraid of contracting the illness.
Have you had direct contact with her in recent days?
I've not been able to telephone her, but I have been in contact by email, yes. And unfortunately, yesterday I got an email from her that she was forced to close her clinic because of her own staff refusing to come in for fear of getting Ebola.
Now, what, when you talk about clinics closing and hospitals not being allowed to open, it sounds like that's something that's just going to make the outbreak even worse.
Yeah, if you think about the Ebola infection, it's a viral infection, and it's transmitted, as you noted earlier on the broadcast, by contacting a patient with, the bodily fluids of a patient that's infected. And these people, in the initial stages, they come down with high fevers, muscle aches, headaches, but then they rapidly develop into having some gastrointestinal symptoms, the vomiting and the diarrhea, and then later bleeding. And so you can imagine a patient that's vomiting and having diarrhea, those secretions being contagious, what a disaster that would be to try to handle in a home setting versus a hospital setting.
What, in working with this clinic in Monrovia in Liberia, how much of a challenge is it to dealing with the local community, perhaps, with people that might have a distrust of Western science or medicine? Is that a problem, that even before the Ebola outbreak has been a problem?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's been some mistrust of Western medicine. There has been some pretty outrageous claims made against the West that this is a conspiracy theory of people in the West trying to wreak havoc on the people of Africa. That's happened in the past with the HIV illness. It's happened now with Ebola. They're blaming the West for creating this crisis, which is illogical, but it feeds into the hysteria that's present in the minds of a lot of people there.
I was even reading that some people believe that Ebola is a hoax by the Liberian president to get money. How difficult then is it for the RN at that clinic in Monrovia, Denise, and others in trying to fight these misunderstandings or these conspiracy theories about Ebola?
Yeah, I think education is so important, and unfortunately, some of the sensational things grab people's attention more than a reasoned explanation. It's an uphill climb sometimes to try to educate the public about the real risk of an infection like this. First of all, the fact that it is real, and then the very real steps you have to take in preventing it, which are very, relatively easy if you understand how the disease is spread.
Do you know how much of a hype there is in Africa regarding this, or is this a hype that we're just dealing with here in our media here in the U.S.?
No, it's through Africa as well, and I give credit to a lot of the West African countries. They are coming out with public service announcements on television about not panicking and how to prevent it. Hopefully the people are taking those messages to heart. But you also have to understand, this is the first time that West Africa has been hit with Ebola. It was first discovered back in 1976 when it hit Zaire, which is now DR Congo. And in fact, this outbreak is a form of the Zaire Ebola virus. It's one of five subtypes, and this is the most virulent subtype. So it is a very virulent subtype. It's serious, but if it's the first time your part of the world has experienced the illness, there is going to be some natural hype that goes along with it.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're talking with Dr. Greg Kuiper, Director of Ministry Development at the Luke Society in Sioux Falls. The Luke Society is an international organization of Christian health and business professionals. They have partnerships with community health clinics around the world, including Liberia, one of the countries in West Africa affected by the Ebola outbreak. Here in the U.S., Dr. Kuiper, what are the problems do you see with the hype and fear over Ebola?
Well, I think in the United States, there's probably a more reasoned response to the Ebola I think people do listen to our health department, and they're not panicking about sitting next to someone on an airplane. On the other hand, Ebola has been in the United States in the past with some monkeys that were infected that were imported from the Philippines, but it really hasn't affected people. And now we've got a couple, well, two cases that are notable that have been transferred back to the United States. I think that's generated some concern, but I think people also trust our health department, our health facilities. And, you know, we are blessed with state-of-the-art health facilities that rival none around the world, that exceed health facilities around the world. So we are blessed to have that luxury here.
Are there concerns about missionaries or medical staff traveling back and forth to and from West Africa?
Well, I think you have to be careful. If you're going to travel to an endemic zone like this and be working with patients that have Ebola, you have to be very well informed on how to prevent the disease. You have to be well informed on the signs and symptoms. That if you do come down with them, you take immediate action. And that's exactly what Dr. Brantley did when he became infected. So it's interesting, you know, Christians are the ones that do want to reach out and bring medical care to people in need. That's been true in the history of medical outbreaks in Christianity. With the plague in the past, Christians are the ones to reach out, even if it means putting their life at some risk.
Well, I'd like to get a little background in the work of the Luke Society. What is the history of the organization?
Well, we've been around for 50 years, and for the last 35 years have had more of an international focus, where we come alongside doctors that are indigenous. They live and work in their own country. Rather than sending U.S. doctors abroad to do medical work, we partner with Christian doctors that are in the other countries, that developing countries. They know the language, they know the culture of the people, they know what the medical needs are, and they're really the best suited to meet those medical needs, especially treating tropical diseases and things that we don't even have good education, you know, we're not exposed to as often here and aren't as well educated on in the U.S.
We were talking earlier about the distrust of Western medicine, Western science. Does establishing the partnership with the local clinic, since it's the local people that are dealing with the patients on site there in the communities, do you think that helps in any way in dealing with some of that that mistrust of Western science?
Yeah, the people that come to our ministry sites around the world, they recognize the quality of the care that they receive. They recognize that the care is given with compassion, Christian love and compassion, and treating each patient with dignity. And that's attractive to people, no matter what your culture or language. And so it's been a really good relationship. They have come to love and trust our donors and the people that support the Luke Society, you know, to make it possible to build a clinic in a small community that would never otherwise have access to health care.
How does the Luke Society go about setting up these partnerships with clinics around the world?
We mainly come in contact with Christian visionaries, doctors that really want to have an impact in their own country. And many of them want to work in rural areas where people don't get the health care they need. And so to do that requires a small financial investment that they would not be able to make were it not for our support. So we come alongside them and might help them in building a small community-based clinic. And with time, they will add a lab, or they might add X-ray or ultrasound and provide more and more services that are needed in the community. So we do that with a hands-off approach. We don't manage or own their ministry. We trust them to meet the needs of the people living in their community in the way that's most socially appropriate.
Dr. Kuiper, the clinic in Liberia, do you see challenges as far as getting the doors reopened there? Or is that something you think can happen soon, or is this just too difficult of a situation right now?
Well, that's a great question, Carl. I was pondering that very issue this morning. I thought, now what is going to change to allow Denise to open the doors to her clinic again? Because I'm really afraid, especially in a city like Monrovia, where you know that people are being cared for in homes, and more people are getting exposed and are going to be infected. I think it's going to be several weeks, you know, in my estimation, before things turn around. Until people recognize that they need to quarantine the patients, that this is a valuable thing for the community, we're just seeing the start of the epidemic there, I'm afraid. Because if you have, you know, parents or brothers and sisters caring for patients in the home, not aware of how to practice strict hygiene procedures, you know, with hand washing and management of the diarrhea and the bleeding and all that, and then on top of that, patients, you know, with this form of Ebola, there's a high mortality rate. You know, over half of the people now are dying with supportive care. And without strong supportive care, IV fluids, that kind of thing, it's going to be a higher death rate. It's going to approach 80% to 90% for people managed at home. And then burying the dead people, if that's not done in a safe way, more and more people get exposed. So I really have fears that we're going to see more cases in a town, a city like Liberia, Monrovia, Liberia, than we are even today.
Is there anything that those of us here in South Dakota can do to help in one way or another?
As Christians, we recognize that the power of prayer is unbelievable. So we've asked our supporters, our prayer partners, to be in prayer for the situation. Yes, providing supportive financial aid can help, but that's not going to stop the disease. I think that's going to require a concerted effort of public education and cooperation. I don't see any other way around that.
Well, Dr. Kuiper, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
That's Dr. Greg Kuiper. He's the Director of Ministry Development at the Luke Society in Sioux Falls. The Luke Society is an international organization of Christian health and business professionals, which has partnerships with community health clinics around the world, including Liberia, one of the countries in West Africa affected by the Ebola outbreak. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with Adrian Hannes of Augustana College's Archaeology Laboratory. He's appearing on an episode of the PBS science reality series Time Team America tonight. And then later this hour, we'll hear about the role philanthropic nonprofits can play in building rural communities in South Dakota.